What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Avalanche Warning, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. I am your host, Bailey Curtis, joined by a little bit of a different squad here today. Gavin may or may not be joining us later, but we have a regular co-host and Grant Foster here, and we are joined by making his podcasting debut, Grant's brother, Reed Foster. Reed? I know it's going to be a little bit chaotic today, but thank you so much for hopping on. I'm expecting fun banter, and yeah, it's going to be a fun one.
I am very happy to be here. Yes, making my maiden voyage on podcasting, so we'll see how this goes.
Grant, it's not an intro to the podcast before I ask, how is it going for you on your things on your end? You just started a new job.
Yeah, starting the new job, working 9-hour days, working pretty late into the day, which is always great. You know, everybody loves that. But happy to be here. We're going to have more things to debate now, which is great. But that's what we call podcasting.
That it is. But with that said, then, we kind of had an interesting episode last week. I guess the episode didn't quite upload properly, but our last episode, we kind of took a deep dive into the blue line, going over our expectations for each guy and looking at what things look like into this upcoming year, especially with the addition of Brent Burns. We're going to kind of do that, but with the forward group today. Now, before kind of diving into expectations and things, I want to get some quick bit of news out of the way. I have been stressing, at least the last few podcasts, that some work on the bottom six needed to be done. That's probably where my only question mark lies. It lies for me, is the bottom six. I feel like everything else is, I feel pretty confident. And I don't know if the Avs have bugs or mics or somewhere. They made some bottom six moves. Victor Olofsson, 30 years old, played for the Vegas Golden Knights last season, just signed with the Avalanche on a one-year, $1.575 deal. Now, this is a guy who played 56 games last year with the Golden Knights, 10 goals, 14 assists for an overall of 29. Grant, I'll get into thoughts here in a bit, but Grant, first off, starting with you, what are your kind of thoughts on this deal?
Well, I didn't realize he was signed for 1.5. I thought he was signed for 800K as like the preview or like the very first reports were that he signed for like 800K. So I didn't know he signed for 1.5, but it makes sense with the cap going up. You know, Victor Olofsson, I think he's going to really help out on the second power play unit, mostly because he's a goal scorer and a net front presence. That was one of his big deals with the Vegas Golden Knights, especially having William Karlsson on his line. I can't remember. I think Brandon Saad was also on his line too. So that was kind of a nightmare if you're, you know, any team that doesn't have any depth. But I'm hoping that he can continue that goal scoring prowess that he had at least last year with 15 goals being a third, fourth liner. The Avalanche are in desperate need of any kind of help on the bottom six now that they've given Charlie Coyle away. And not a center, though. Not a center, which is a little interesting now that we're going to fully go into the Jack Drury faith tree. But let's just all say a hope and prayer at the fact that Jack Drury actually does do what he's signed to do and isn't a total letdown like Newhook, Compher, and the long list of Avalanche centermen that have not worked in the bottom six.
Reed, anything to piggyback off on?
Well, it seems necessary to sign him. I was looking at the roster today and I was like, what are we doing? We need somebody. I was projecting out the lines and I was like, who are you going to put up there? I mean, we got Ivan on the fourth line, projected to be on the fourth line until LOC comes back. So you kind of had to do this.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of the bigger things that worried me, was that before this Victor Olofsson signing, you had Ivan and Daniil Gushchin, who was acquired in a trade with San Jose. And while I have all the faith in the world that Parker Kelly can perform as a fourth line center, we saw a good portion of him at that position last season. I think that's a really, really weak fourth line to put out with, especially with how stacked this top six is. And I think double shifting some of those guys in favor of trying to give your fourth line as little minutes as possible is the worst possible idea. So I think in signing Victor Olofsson, you bring Joel Kiviranta back down to that fourth line, who's maybe a little bit elite fourth liner, in my opinion, especially with the season he had last year. We've talked a little bit about that on that podcast, on this podcast, and saying we don't think he will be able to recreate that, but still looking for an incredible season from Kivi there. Ivan has proven he can play at the NHL level. I think there's maybe a little bit more development to be had in his situation, but I think he is able to play in a fourth line role on this team. I think that's entirely possible. And the way that it looks right now, I'm not entirely upset with the structure of this currently. I was talking with Jesse and Megan of Gorilla Sports on Monday and just kind of telling them that I do think Jack Drury is a capable third line center. I think he's able to make that jump, and there's the expectation that he is able to produce at that level. Especially with, he's been a guy in a bottom six role his entire career in the NHL. So I have no faith or no doubt in my mind whatsoever that he'll be able to provide there. But before I jump too heavily into that, that I think is a good transition into our expectations for this roster, or at least this forward lineup that is currently set at the moment as of recording this. Arturi Lehkonen, Nathan MacKinnon, Martin Necas, the projected first line. Gabriel Landeskog, Brock Nelson, and Valeri Nichushkin, that projected second line. Victor Olofsson, Jack Drury, and Ross Colton on that third line. And then Ivan, Parker Kelly, and Joel Kiviranta on that fourth line. Reed, I'll start off with you. Far as expectations go heading into this season, you're seeing not a lot of turnover from last season. And that just kind of goes into Sakic's words from the exit interview, is that in saying they really like the group that they put together at the trade deadline. The only pieces really you're seeing missing here are Charlie Coyle and Miles Wood missing in that trade. But looking at what they have right now, it looks fairly similar. What do you think they can do with what they have currently set up?
Well, I'll take the low-hanging fruit here. I'll let Grant do the deep dives into bottom six conversations and stuff like that. This is Marty's year, in my opinion. You look at this roster, and he's the new guy, and he's replacing Rantanen, and Grant just left. Grant didn't like my takes, and he just left. Anyway, I would say,
the yeah, spider.
Wow. Anyway, leave that in. I know Grant said that you edit. Leave all that in. It's incredibly distracting that he got up in the middle of Marty Necas talk.
I know. How rude.
I know.
Marty Necas.
Yeah. But it's his season. I think the Avs are going to live and die by his performance, and we can get into depth and all that stuff. I mean, we know what to expect with MacKinnon. We know what to expect with the majority of this team. Is he going to be Rantanen, or is he going to be Necas from last year, where, I mean, if you played a drinking game with how many times he fell down, you could get pretty hammered at the end of the night. So I'd say that's what I'm looking for.
Marty having his year.
Well, if he starts falling down in the first week, you know, we're going to have some problems. And I think I don't buy into like what fans say online, because I'm a fan online. I can say, you know, whatever I want. That doesn't mean I know anything. But there seems to be a little bit of like, is this the right guy? Can we keep this guy long term? Does he want to be here long term? So I think in this season, I'm looking forward to seeing like, hey, is he going to be what they wanted him to be when they traded Rantanen?
You do bring up a good point in a lot of the discourse and unknown that's surrounding him currently. I do think, as far as matchups go, I don't think he's going to find anything much better than playing next to a guy like Nathan MacKinnon. Mm-hmm. I don't think it, like, as far as talent goes and stylistic matchups go, this is about as good as he's going to get. That's out of what's available currently to him. And so I'm going to echo kind of what I'd said the last to people over the summer and things of that sort. I never got the impression that he was unhappy. I will say that just in the past, having a sort of unique perspective on his career as a whole, he does seem I feel like flaky is maybe not the right word, but he is very sure of himself and sure of his self-worth and is not afraid to fight for that. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some sort of third bridge deal. I think for a player at his age, what he should be looking for is something long-term. He should be looking to settle down somewhere with a decent AAV, looking to play the prime years of his career in one place if he is able to. I don't think a bridge deal is in his best interest. And if he plays in his entire career that way, he's never going to be happy in a certain place. I do think, again, with how he plays stylistically next to Nathan MacKinnon, there is a lot of potential for Neches. And in a contract year, you generally get the best out of a player. So this is really going to be Marty Neches has a microscope on him kind of season, and saying, okay, you had a career season last season. Let's see if you can reproduce that and potentially push yourself to your limits and to your ceiling this season. Let's see what you can do, and let's see what kind of contract you're worthy of. If you want $10 million, prove it. Kind of thing.
What he'll have all season is he'll have the Moose in the same division. They'll be playing against them, constant comparisons. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did that in the postseason. We did that in the regular season last season. Anytime Mikko Rantanen steps on the ice, we'll know about it, and we'll compare it to Neches, because that was the trade. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of pressure. There's a lot of comparisons going on, and I hope he does well. I liked him when we got him. Some of us on this podcast did not.
Now, Grant, yeah. I'm interested to get your thoughts here too, looking at the second line. We'll do more in depth. I feel like we can kind of pump it on Marty Neches once we get around to him. I'm interested to hear what you think about this second line, because I went on a podcast earlier this week and we talked at length about Gabriel Landeskog and the question marks surrounding him. And, you know, he's been out for three seasons, and you see him come back in the playoffs and it almost looks as though he's never left. And so they're pretty confidently parking him on that second line, next to Brock Nelson, with Valeri Nichushkin on the other wing. This seems to me like a steady second line. I feel like I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think the second line will look like this, especially come the season, because I don't believe that this first line. I don't believe that the first line should be the first line at all. I don't think Lehkonen really – I don't think Lehkonen's good enough to be on the first line, especially
if
with
only Larry Kushkin. You guys listening could see Reed's face currently.
Yeah, to get a simulcast going here.
I think Lekkonen is great when he has playmakers around him, and I think he's. I mean, you're getting some of the best with Nathan MacKinnon and Martin Natchez there, but the problem is that guy is bare, like at times he was scoring goals on his ass. Like he couldn't even keep up with the fact that Martin Natchez and MacKinnon were so fast. That's why I think a guy like Nichushkin is a better kind of fit on the top line. You have a bigger 6'4" forward who's going to do all the forechecking for Natchez and MacKinnon, because we all know that they don't play any defense really. But like to your comment about Landeskog, you know, him being pretty solid, it's something that this season's going to be the real kind of, well, if, you know, is, you know, they don't have, I don't think they have as many back-to-backs as they once did. You're going to have to double check me on that.
Fact check it.
You know, but they don't have any, I feel like the season is going to be tough. Not in the beginning. I don't think it's going to be tough in the beginning. I think it's going to be really difficult in March and April after the Olympics, because it, you know, they're going to get 2 weeks off, and Team Sweden's already put him pretty much on the roster at this point, only seeing what he did in the playoffs. But is he going to be healthy for not really? He's not really. No one's really playing at the elite level. No one's playing 82 games this season. They're probably going to be playing closer to 95, 100 just before the postseason. And
in my pre-show notes, Grant, and granted, we only had him for a few games.
And granted,
at the end there, Landeskog there. I was shocked to see 17 minutes of ice time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got a guy, he hasn't played in 3 years. And I mean, some of these other younger guys are like, you know, 10 minutes. Now, granted, we're talking about, oh, captain, my captain, and an elite player. But that, I think that speaks to where they think he's at, fitness level and just health level. Going 17 minutes playoff hockey, I mean, I was shocked to see that.
Well, and
you brought up the schedule too. You know, they're going through the gauntlet in January, I think. I mean, I think, like, I was looking, LOC's out for 5 to 6 months. And then I was looking to see, like, oh, when is he going to come back? Because that was, like, in June when they said he was out 5 to 6 months. So January, I mean, they got a gauntlet on the East Coast. Maybe they're not away, but they have those tough teams. They play the Panthers at that time. So, yeah, I think will Landeskog be healthy enough for those bigger games, you know? I'd even say, like, load management, that guy. When we're playing the Ducks, when we're playing the Sharks, forget it. Leave him home.
Yeah, you're not gonna, this is also going.
You're not going to get person. That out of him, but I think that's something to look at.
I just want this audience to know this was the same person. Reed was the same person who said that I don't think Landeskog will ever play another game in the National Hockey League.
I didn't. I honestly didn't because what was that, a year ago?
The season before last season.
When I was watching the news, I'm a big CBS in the mornings, Channel 4 guy, a little plug to them. And they, you know, they don't know anything about hockey. They said his name was, like, you know, Abriel Andeskog. They had no idea what they were talking about. But they had footage of him practicing. They were like, oh, captain, my captain is skating. Now, this wasn't last year. This is like 2 years ago now. And I watched the footage. I thought, oh, my God, it looks like Grant skating out there. And I was like, oh, God, he's never playing again. So, yes, I did say that.
Yeah, that was the same person who said he'd never skate again.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. For those of you listening to us, just wanted to introduce Gavin back to the podcast. Gavin, thank you so much for finding the time to hop on. I know you had kind of a busy night.
Oh, bite me, Gavin.
Yeah, the... local Mexican restaurant by us just closed down, so we had to do a bit of a death dinner and drink all the margaritas as possible. But now we're here, we're ready.
Perfect time to talk about Gabriel Landeskog.
Let's go. All right.
So we're just kind of going into expectations and kind of chatting about this projected second line on the daily faceoff, and kind of talking about our expectations and got to talking about Gabriel Landeskog's famous return to hockey. Your thoughts on second line of Landeskog, Nelson, and Chushkin?
I'm excited for it. Honestly, we saw in the playoffs, I'm sure it's been mentioned before, but it was like one of the best shutdown, like offensive producing lines that existed in the entire playoffs. And that was in one round versus teams that even went to all four. So it was, it's something that I'm fully excited to see for a full season. As for Gabe Landeskog himself, I'm going to be a little pessimistic and I'm going to say he plays exactly 62 games this season. I don't think he'll play any more than that.
Exactly.
Exactly. You can book it now. August
receipts.
9:03 p.m. MST. Yeah. I think he'll I think he'll only play that many games. I don't think it'll be because he's incredibly bad, but I mean, it's a guy that hasn't played in 3 years. So I really think that obviously Gabe Landeskog, not only on the ice, but off the ice, he's a difference maker, incredible leader, one of the best captains in the NHL. Love to have him. I'm so glad he's back. I mean, we saw with Brock Nelson, a guy that also I think will benefit from no longer having to be like the veteran guy in a locker room. I think a full season of him in the Av system will benefit him greatly. Also away from the horrific Lou Lamoriello Islander system. I mentioned that I don't like Lou Lamoriello, but yeah.
Really? I had no clue.
I'm excited to see what Brock Nelson can do, as well as Valeri Nichushkin probably having his most healthiest and like low key season since what, 2021, where he's not coming back from major off ice problems, not coming off of horrific injury. I mean, the guy just didn't... Sorry, what was that? Why did you just? I don't get it, Grant. But yeah, no.
He's a big fan of the booger sugar.
Yeah, a little bit too much. I mean, he likes the snow a little bit too much in Denver. But no, I mean, it's a situation where I'm really excited to see what he can do in a full season, where he's healthy, where he does not have the spotlight on him. Honestly, that entire second line, I can't wait to have a second line scoring option in Denver for a very, very long time.
Fair. All right, briefly getting into the bottom six. I know our main focus today is going to be looking at the top six in depth and our expectations for each individual player, sort of like what we did with defense last podcast. But specifically before getting into that, looking at the bottom six with the new signing in Victor Olofsson, looking at that third line with Ross Colton on the other wing and Jack Drury projected to make that jump to 3C. Looking at Parker Kelly as 4C. Reed, I know you have all your notes and all your expectations.
Yes, I do. Here. Yeah.
I will pose the question here to you. Is Jack Drury a decent option for that third line center? Do you think he plays well?
You know, honestly, yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the playoffs, he did pretty well. I mean, I have it right here on my handy dandy notebook. He had a goal. He had an assist. He was plus two and he got almost 13 minutes of ice time. I mean, I think that's a pretty good performance in the playoffs. He got some meaningful minutes. And honestly, though, who else are you going to put there? Mm-hmm. That's the problem with the Avs right now, in my opinion. I mean, are you going to bump Parker Kelly up to center on the third line? I don't know. So in my mind, he's the best that they got, and hopefully he can pan out.
And there's the thought, too, that you do have a little bit of versatility in Ross Colton. But I think there's the thought there that Bednar liked him too much at wing to potentially try that out again. You've got a steady center in Jack Drury, who you know is going to help face off numbers. Not even if you're looking for scoring, but you've already got that help on the dot. That alone for me and his confidence there already kind of says like, hey, you can play third line minutes. I have no doubt in my mind. Gavin, throw it to you. Capabilities of Drury, what you're looking at from Parker Kelly centering that fourth line.
I mean, I like Jack Drury since the second the Avs traded for him. I mean, before I got famous, we'll say, before I had any on any type of podcasts, I was telling you, Bailey, I'm like, I'm looking at Jack Drury's numbers, and I'm seeing that he was like a second-round pick, captain of his team in the USHL, like lettered in the AHL.
Harvard guy.
Where he also put up like near point per game in the AHL. And he caps out as a fourth line center. Like, I don't buy that. I think he can absolutely be a third line center. I mean, you look at Victor Olofsson and you look at Ross Colton. Those are guys that like don't drive play very well. Ross Colton can make the occasional pass. Victor Olofsson cannot, like, quite simply. But Jack Drury is a puck distributor. Like, this is a guy that can absolutely gain the zone. Is the perfect complementary piece to that third line between those two wings. I'm excited for it. I absolutely think he can be the third line center. I don't think the Avs will trade for a center until they see what Jack Drury's got. I think most teams are comfortable with seeing like what they've got. And a quote I saw from DNVR from Eric Lacroix said, no team wants to trade a guy because not a single team in the NHL yet has lost a game in this season. Until they do, that's when they're willing to actually trade somebody. But right now, I think the Avs are comfortable riding this lineup into the regular season. Parker Kelly, free this man. Free this man for being the fourth line center. Let him be a wing. Let him spread his wings and fly. He was much better when he was a fourth line wing than he was a fourth line center. But honestly, if you're heading into March and you're saying like trade deadline, get me a fourth line center. Easy. I don't really have a problem with it.
Okay.
Before moving into Bailey, back to your face-off comment too. I was just looking it up. Parker Kelly last season face-off percentage 43% wins. Ross Colton was abysmal. He was at 40%. And then you've got Drury. He's at 56%, and the whole team is at 47%. And in my opinion, like your most important job as a center, win a face-off.
Absolutely.
If we can have a guy that's winning the faceoffs, especially in the offensive zone, that's huge.
Grant, before we get into our in-depth looks at some of these top six, I know you're not exactly a Jack Drury truther, just like you're not a Martin Netches truther. Wow. Your thoughts?
Grant is contrarian. Oh, what a shock.
What can I say? What can I say? Carolina Hurricanes players aren't the cream of the crop.
Oh, my God.
So, until they leave the Carolina Hurricanes.
Until they leave the Carolina Hurricanes. There you go. Here's the problem that I have with Jack Drury, and it really doesn't have anything to do with him as like a player or anything. He's not big. I mean, the nice thing about having Coyle at the third line at 3C was that he was 6'4", 220, who had parked
it. Gone.
Yes, but if there's anything that you've noticed in the past, you know, three Stanley Cups since the Avalanche won, because the Avalanche really only won because, you know, they had a great lineup from top to bottom, is all these teams are big.
This coming from the guy who could not stop talking about how much he hated Darcy Kuemper.
I do hate Darcy Kuemper. But my point still remains that, like, and, you know, you need guys who are big. Jack Drury is what, like 5'11"? He's 5'11", 186.
Six foot, Grant.
That's 5'11". He's 5'11" completely. Google and, never you lies. Know, and I mean, he's always kind of the – I just don't see it. I honestly think that Ross Colton should be traded before the season begins to get some decent draft capital, and then you go out and get Jack Roslovic, a guy that Jack Drury is used to playing with. So that, you know, if Jack Drury's not working at 3C, you're not going to Parker Kelly. And, you know, that would be a much better thing than having him say, if you it relies solely on him. Because if he does not perform to what we think he's going to, what's going to happen next? And I also read, I want to say one goal, one assist in the playoffs. That's great. But you know who else put up triple those points was Logan O'Connor. And Logan O'Connor was on Jack Drury's line. So is that really that good if you're going to be the guy involved in the Mikko Rantanen trade? I don't think so.
he was extra on that trade. They did not trade Rantanen for Jack Drury, Grant. And also,
he was a second round pick of 2018.
The dude is all right. We're not talking about top line center. We're not talking about top six center. We're talking about depth. And he has a really good faceoff percentage compared to the rest of the team.
Which I think, arguably, not many teams can sit there and say their best faceoff guy is their third line center.
Carolina Hurricanes.
Well, but there's also like the thought
Rod Brindamore doesn't believe in lines.
New York Rangers when Vincent Trocheck was on their third line.
Either
Matt Boldy. You know,
there was a period last year with the Blackhawks where they were thinking that Connor Bedard should just not take faceoffs, play the center role, just not take the faceoffs. Right.
Nathan McKinnon,
I mean, that's a huge part of being center is taking faceoffs. And so, yeah, you can't just say, oh, I'm not a believer in him. Oh, he only scored one goal, scored more goals than Brock Nelson.
I agree, but we're talking about the guy involved in one of the biggest trades in the Avalanche his history. If you're going to be a part of the trade, you want to, I guess, Natchez is the one that you're getting for that trade, and Drury and the picks are like secondary, but you want every phase of that deal to work out. You don't want to just look at the one guy you're getting in this trade and go, oh yeah, he's great. Everybody else just sucks.
You think he didn't work out last year?
You think
Drury didn't work out last year?
I don't think he did. I think his one goal that he scored was in dead time when the Avalanche were kicking the ass of the Stars 7-1 in their own barn.
That could have been.
The assist he had was a secondary assist on a goal that was an assist on a goal that really didn't matter in that game that they lost 3-4. Well, that's also because they blew it and had, you know, a 5-on-3 going into or a power play going into overtime. They dumped it up, but
this is right, why Gavin, Grant is saying? Our this is I why mean, Grant is our resident hot take artist.
I will say, looking at the whole series, it's just made me even more mad. Looking back at I haven't come to peace with it. It's just gotten worse as time goes on. Looking back at how many games the Avs blew. Have I mentioned that Jared Bednar should be fired? Yeah, I just don't see the fact that I mean, blaming your fourth line center for not having enough points is kind of not relevant, in my opinion, especially when Charlie Coyle was an absolute ghost. Brock Nelson didn't score a goal. I thought he had good games, but you look down the lineup, guys were not producing and were not properly motivated. Fire your head coach. Frankly, I think that when you come to the end of the day, I think that Jack Drury can do the job. I really want to see what he can do in that role. The Avs were super high on him. I think that, especially because he was involved in the Mikko Rantanen trade. If he can't do it, then November, December, get another 3C. But I think you would be definitely making a mistake if you didn't at least try it for at least a month.
But isn't that the problem? We keep going through guys and expecting them to be the guy. We expect Middleset to be the guy. We expect Comfort to be the guy. We expect Newhook to be the guy. We expect this guy to be the guy, that guy, that guy, that guy. When do you officially say that you just can't find it and you can't develop them?
I mean, Gavin, it's a third
I'm just going to say, Grant.
Second line center.
The grass is always greener for you, Grant. I mean, you're like, who's this magical 3C that, I mean, already the season hasn't even started. Grant's already, you know,
throwing rocks. You had Charlie Coyle. You had an established third line center who had been built to play there, who had a better faceoff record than Jack Drury did.
As Gavin
hated him.
As Gavin already mentioned, though, he was a ghost when it mattered.
We're talking about someone who's established in the league, a 33-year-old veteran established in the league.
Who was not there.
I agree.
Neither was Jack Drury. He wasn't there either.
But his job isn't to be a point producer. His job is to be a lockdown fourth line, and that's exactly what he was.
And did the fourth – where was the fourth line when Colin Blackwell scored an OT?
Grant, your Charlie Coyle thing here, He had 1 point, one goal.
I think
of course, you know, you had McKinnon yelling at him at one point during the series. I don't know if you remember that. They were getting off the ice. He was like, "Charlie, what the hell are you doing?" I think it's fine. You let Jack Drury test it out. I don't know who this magical center you think we can just go get. And honestly, getting rid of Russ Colton before the season even starts, I think that is stupid. This is a team that needs depth, and you're just going to go swap pieces.
Not to mention a piece who can add a little bit of grit he's on the ice.
Where was Ross Colton last year? Oh, that's right. He was injured for most of the season.
You can't blame a guy for being injured.
To that effect, though, too, you almost can't. You talk about half the lineup at that point.
Yes, but him especially. He was missing games in the playoffs. He wasn't missing games. He wasn't like.
You can't blame a guy for getting hurt.
You also missed games in the regular season.
You can't blame a guy for getting hurt. I'm just saying you can't a team where they're going to get Olofsson, because you look at the roster and you're like, well, LOC is gone until January.
And that solves your Ivan Ivanich.
Fill the same role. Olofsson will not be on the penalty kill. He is not a penalty killer. He will not be.
No, and his defense is suspect, apparently.
I think we have enough guys on the PK at this point. And really, if Olofsson can be like, I don't know, like serviceable as a defenseman, or not as a defenseman, but like the defense, I think we're chilling with it. A question I want to pose to you guys, because it kind of feels like not enough people are talking about it. Should Olofsson not be on the power play?
He should absolutely be on the power play because this. Hold on. I'm going to take this because I wanted to say this before I send it over to you.
Should he not be in Rantanen's spot? Like, I don't know because people talk about it like as, oh, we should probably put him there, you know, when the Avs aren't scoring enough and they need to like really shake it up. Like, should Olofsson not be there full time as like a one-timer threat?
His finishing numbers alone say yes.
No, and I'll give you my reason why. This team is terrible, absolutely awful. We saw it in the playoffs against Dallas, and we've seen it in playoffs prior. If the first power play cannot get it done like they did last season, and they did in the playoffs, and they did the season before that, and the playoffs before that, there's nothing on the second power play to combat that. That's why, I mean, if you look at Daily Faceoff right now, they have the first power play unit as Landeskog, Natchez, Lekkonen, McKinnon, Makar. Beautiful. Great. And then you have your second power play unit. Right now they have Ross Colton there. I wouldn't put him there. I would put Devon Taves. I would have Devon Taves and Brent Burns, because you can have Brent Burns on the left side to hit a one-timer. Mm. Don't interrupt me. You can have Brent Burns on the left side to hit a one-timer, and you can have Victor Olofsson play in front of the net. You have Nichushkin to also play in front of be in front of the net. Then you have Nelson to play on the right side where Mikko Rantanen was, being a facilitator up and down throughout the lineup.
Did you just put Brent six
Burns,
people?
Brent Burns, who had a historically awful year on the power play last year with Carolina.
I don't care. Look at Brent Burns over the course of his career.
Grant didn't do math right there. He just listed six guys.
Ross Colton shouldn't.
I was going to say, like,
there.
Grant, you know, maybe you don't know the rules.
Because it should be Victor Olofsson in the bumper spot in the middle. Brock Nelson on the right-hand side where Mikko Rantanen would normally be. You have Brent Burns on the left-hand side where McKinnon normally is, because you can have him. He is a mobile, agile defenseman. You can get Girard the hell out of there because he's not useful in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And then you have Taser at the top, quarterbacking everything, and you have Nichushkin in front of the net. That sounds like a good second power play unit for if the first power play unit cannot get it done, which they did not get it done in the last two seasons, and is the big crux of why they did not beat the Dallas Stars. Because if you have a 4-minute power play going into overtime, you better fucking score on the power play.
No, I absolutely agree. I would put that more on Ray Bennett.
I would too, but I'm looking at it. I'm trying to look at it.
But yeah. I would also say that most teams that run like a split power play unit are just failures in general. I don't want to call out anyone specifically, but teams run by Ron Francis, named the Seattle Kraken, are horrible at the power play. I think
that's because they have no star power, though.
Yeah, they just are a worthless organization. But then you see the – in general, like, I think the Avs' first power play unit has the potential to be great. And when you look at, like, the Edmonton Oilers, yes, they have Connor McDavid. Yeah, they have, like, Leon Draisaitl.
And
outside of that, why is their power play one of the best, like, year after year?
Because Connor McDavid is the best forward in the National Hockey League. And if you have four, if it's, you have a 5-on-4, McDavid acts as another skater. That's how good he is.
I would absolutely say, though, that, like, the better talent distribution is McKinnon, McCarr, and either Rantanen or Natchez. So the fact that the Avs have, like, a worse power play is kind of baffling to me. So I absolutely think that the Avs deserve to have just as good of a power play. Mm-hmm. And really, like, I don't – if you're going to play McKinnon and Natchez on the same side, on the half wall, where they kind of, like, play catch-up together, they confuse teams, I don't see why Victor Olofsson should not be on the other side. Like, especially, like, I get there's, like, more talented forwards in general, but no one that has quite as good of a – as a right-side threat – as Victor Olofsson. Like, Brock Nelson, they tried him there. That's not what he should do. He should either be in the bumper or not on the power play at all. Same with Valeri Nichushkin. If you want to get fired and you're some bald dude that looks like Humpty Dumpty, you put Arturi Lehkonen on it and you get fired the very second the series ends. I mean, I really don't see why Victor Olofsson should not be on the power play as a lethal weapon. Because I mean,
on the top power play,
yeah, first power play,
yeah, replacing Landeskog, you think?
I think so. Landeskog should not be on that right time threat. He should either be in the bumper or not.
He never was at all. He never was. Landeskog was in front of the net.
I know.
They had Lehkonen in the bumper.
No, well, right. But if you're looking at it now, I agree with Gavin here because now you slot Landeskog out. You got Lehkonen in the bumper. That's where Lehkonen plays. I mean, I've never seen Lehkonen score a goal that wasn't in the bumper.
But this goes back to what I said two podcasts ago, when Natchez should be adopting a more McDavid-esque style on the power play, where he's not limited to the left side. He's almost formless in his ability to find open lanes. Or if you want Nathan McKinnon to do that. The problem is that you honestly have too many right-handers on the top power play.
I mean, I'll be honest. I love Montreal. They're my, like, second favorite team. I love what they'll become. I look at Nick Suzuki, and I see what he does on that power play, and he's exactly what you say, Grant. He just floats around. He's formless. The guy has, like – I looked at his stats because I draft him a lot in Fantasy League, by the way. That's my secret. look at his stats, and I see that he has, like, 20 power play assists, but, like, 4 power play goals. That's exactly what Martin Natchez could excel at, is doing exactly what you said, Grant. Be formless, float around, and distribute the puck. I agree.
And a callback to the beginning of the episode, don't fall down.
I didn't hear that part.
I brought that up. I brought that up that we play drinking games every time Natchez ends up on the ground, so...
And I will do a shot on this podcast.
Okay. If he draws a penalty, do I have to do the shot?
No. I'm not. I am talking about non-contact.
Oh, okay.
Bird like just it, like banana peel. Like
when I go to stick and puck and I haven't been skating for a while and I step out on the ice and my legs turn into jello, fall down, not like.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
With that, let's head into some very brief, because we're at kind of the 20-minute left in the episode mark. Starting off with some expectations heading into specific guys in this top six. Starting off with Arturi Lehkonen, like I did last podcast, going to go over some stats. Whoever wants to chime in first, it's a free-for-all, little roundtable situation, up to you guys. Starting off with Arturi Lehkonen and his numbers from the 2024-25 season, 69 games played, 27 goals, 18 assists, 45 points overall, a plus 36.
Shocked.
I
shocked when I saw that. I was like, no, ESPN's wrong. ESPN's wrong. That's I double checked it with the NHL.com. I was like, I gotta check
that. Plus 36 with 20 minutes and 23 seconds of ice time per game. On average, one power play goal, five power play points overall, one shorthanded goal, which totals his shorthanded points for the season, five game winning goals. And just for shits and giggles, 148 shots on the season. Whoever wants to take this first, I mean, this was an incredible season. His career best comes from the 2022-23 season following their cup run, where he totaled 51 points. 45 points with a plus 36 on the season. I don't know if it gets a whole lot better than that.
Well, that's obviously
with where he's at in his career.
Well, it's pretty helpful when you have Nathan McKenna on your line all the time.
This is true.
Which is why your argument that plus minus isn't a determining statistic is kind of bullshit.
That's not exactly what I said. I said plus minus is a context stat when used with time on ice, which is why I generally pair those two stats together.
So why were you shocked then when it was a plus 36?
I'll tell you why she was shocked, because I was shocked, because I was writing down every forwards plus minus, and I'm just going to glance right through. No one's really even close to that, Grant. I mean,
not even McKinnon.
No.
I mean, McKinnon's under it. He's getting close at 25 plus minus, but I mean, it was just one of those things where I tend to agree, like plus minus can be kind of a misleading stat, but I do think if you're that much into the plus on the plus minus, it's not, you know, an anomaly kind of thing. You know, if you're like plus five, well, how many times are you just like barely on the ice and a goal is scored, or on the opposite side, a goal is scored against you, so you get the minus. But yeah, to be that far in the plus, I was like, dang.
This guy's a difference maker.
Well, to just answer the question, I mean, that's probably his ceiling, but if he turned in a similar performance, like that's great. And if he's on the top line with McKinnon, you hate to expect people to hit their ceiling year after year. But honestly, if he's with McKinnon, like, yeah, he should probably be putting up those numbers again.
I think he should be a 30 goal scorer. I don't see any evidence to the contrary of why he should not be a 30 goal scorer. I mean,
plays more than 70 games, I absolutely agree.
I agree, yes, but you're also, I mean, you're going to be on a line. You should be on the line, at least in some people's opinion. You should be on McKinnon's line, even though I don't totally subscribe to that. But
with
like
no facts and with no replacements.
But go ahead, Grant. I already gave my explanation. And when we get to the Nichushkin, I'm going to say it again because Gavin didn't hear it. But no, Lehkonen, I mean, if you are going to be on the line with McKinnon and Nichushkin now that they're going to have a full season together, there is absolutely no reason you should not be 27 goals plus. That should 27 goals should not be your ceiling if you're going to play with two guys who primarily like to pass the puck. And like I think I've talked with this about Bailey before, but especially with McKinnon and Natchez being as fast as they are, the big way that he's going to find goals and he's going to score is going to be on the rush when McKinnon and Natchez are pushing defensemen back because they're worried about getting burnt by one of them. And he'll be trailing and they'll give him a pass because they're really good at playmaking and he should score 30. There's no reason why Makar should score 30 goals in a season and your top winger, who you basically built to say we're gonna pass you the puck, put the puck in the net, should not be underneath Makar. That should not happen.
Gavin, anything to add?
No, I mean, I love Lehkonen. I think he is one of the best acquisitions that the Avs front office has done in recent years.
Agreed.
I mean, Montreal kind of got robbed on him. They got, what did we trade for him? Was it Justin Barron?
Yeah, it was Justin Barron in a second.
And the laundry machine, the dryer was included in that too.
Completely worth it. I mean,
that's a semi-pro reference.
I can't even like describe how great Lehkonen is. I mean, he's such a, and like in context, he's the probably should be the sixth best guy on your top six. Like, he's not Nathan MacKinnon. He's not Necas. He's not Nichushkin. He's not Brock Nelson. And he's not, what's the other guy? Landeskog. That's right. Like, but he still is such a good worker that every GM in the league would love to have. Like, I remember people talking about him when the Avs got him. And a lot of the analytics people were like, God damn it, I wanted him for our team. Like, mm-hmm. he's just that good. He came in as like a third line wing for the Avs Cup run, and then he ended up replacing Burakovsky. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just that dynamic. And I'm so glad that the Avs have him at 4.5?
Yep, 4.5.
That's a steal. He'll absolutely get paid. He'll price himself out of Colorado, and I wish him all the best. But for now, I hope we win another cup with him.
He's on year 4 or 5 on his deal.
Yeah, I think he's got all of next season, and then his contract expires.
He has the unfortunate thing of being on the same contract year as Cale Makar, so he's not going to get much there.
No.
Yeah.
Unless he's a friendly deal.
Which, with the cap going up, hopefully they can make something that's maybe not quite as team-friendly as I'm thinking happen. But I don't know. Grant, you make a good point there with that contract year. It is unfortunate for Lekkonen, and I'm hoping the Avalanche would be stupid not to try to make something work. But moving on, hard to with doing him so soon in these analyses. I feel like the second one being the Hart winner and Nathan MacKinnon is not a bad one to do here. 79 games played. The last three, I want to say, came at the end of the season. Just kind of maintenance situations for Nathan MacKinnon.
And watching Landeskog play in the NHL. In the AHL.
Yes, which was, you know, a little bit of a joy to see them in the press box. Or in the player box supporting their guy with Makar. I believe Taves was there as well. That was a fun little surprise. But getting into MacKinnon stats so we can get this over with quickly, because I feel like there's not too I have some things I could say on this, but I feel like there's other situations we could get to instead. Anyway, 79 games played. We've got 32 goals, 84 assists for a whopping 116 points on the season. Now, looking at some of the other stat leaders for this season, that could be considered a lot. When you look at the season prior and him sitting at 140, it's a little underwhelming, which is crazy, a crazy thing to say. Like 116 points, come on, man. plus 25 on the season with 22 minutes and 47 seconds average per game ice time. As far as special team points goes, he's got 9 goals on the power play, totaling 38 points on the power play. Nothing shorthanded, not surprised there. Game-winning goals comes in at 5 with 1 overtime winner. I am going to – this might be a bit of a hot take here, but I think MacKinnon was capable of more than he was able to showcase at some points during last season. I think you see a bit of a kind of stale period from MacKinnon. In my opinion, especially toward the end of the season. And I don't know if that's just frustration or pressure kind of building up from where the team's at and things not meeting his expectations. But I think there was a lot more in the tank that MacKinnon could have given that just was not properly showcased to the level that he's capable of. Throw it to whoever wants to go first.
The key thing that you just said was at the end of the season last season, something big happened last season, and we always go back to the same dude, and I know we're sick of hearing his name, but that Rantanen trade really messed up that team. I really think it did. I mean, because you're not only losing
a great player, but by all accounts, they're all good friends. Mm-hmm. And for him to say the things after the trade, like kind of blindsided by it, I think that really messed up that team for a little bit. To say that a guy who has 116 points is a letdown, that's crazy, Bailey. I mean, that's left the realm of hot take. That's just dumb. As I like to say to you, Bailey, when it comes to the finer things in life, like Diet Dr. Pepper and strawberries and cream Dr. Pepper, that's an L take. That's a bad take.
That's L take right there,
Bailey. You can't. Hockey is such a tough game, and to go 2 years in a row with over 100 points.
He
totaled 111 in the 2022-23 season.
Yeah, and you traded his girlfriend to Carolina, you know, halfway through it. So, I mean,
I think the thing that maybe Bailey's thinking about a little bit is. With Nathan MacKinnon playing over 70 games, I don't think he should ever, if he's playing over 70 games, I don't think he should ever dip below 40 goals. And I think that's the main critique you can probably take from Nathan MacKinnon. Now, this was purely regular season because when the playoffs showed up, that dude scored. That dude put everything on this.
Almost like when it counts.
Yeah. When it counted in the postseason, he scored most of the, I think he scored like 60% of the goals for the Avalanche in that playoff
season. And Logan O'Connor scored the other.
Yeah. I think maybe it's a little misleading looking at the regular season stats saying that 32 goals is kind of a question mark for him because really he should be a 40 goal scorer every year. But I will say, I mean, when the postseason came around and someone needed to put the puck in the net, that dude did. I mean, I don't think anybody had a better round than him. Maybe you could make a case for Sam Reinhart in the Stanley Cup final. But I don't think anybody had an individual round in the postseason.
Can we talk about Barkov?
I don't think anybody had a better playoff round.
No, than Nathan MacKinnon. That's exactly before I throw things over to you, Gavin. That's exactly the point that I was trying to make. Is I'm not saying that 116 points is bad by any means. That's why I prefaced with looking at the stats leaders for. This season, like that's about where the top guys were at. And I'm not shying away from that. I'm saying that was obviously, you know, the high end of this past season. But I can recall multiple different situations last season where I'm watching Nathan MacKinnon park it in his usual spot in the left circle. And I'm just wondering, why is he not shooting this puck? What is going on here? And he just didn't look like himself in some cases. And this is well after the Rantanen trade too. This is well after he's had some time to adjust to having Necas on his wing and, you know, kind of trying to fall into a rhythm there. But there were multiple situations where I'm like, this doesn't look like Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah, but Ovechkin had Nicholas Backstrom as his center, and the guy who'd pass him the puck over to the left circle for like 8 years, and like when you lose a guy like that, if you're Ovechkin, you can't replace Nicholas Backstrom in one season. If you're Nathan MacKinnon, you can't replace Mikko Rantanen.
That's fair.
I'm sorry, I stole
your. No, that's right. I absolutely think you're right. I think at one point during the season, my entire family might have heard me say, I can't believe this guy is waiting for the second coming of Christ to shoot the damn puck.
Yes, exactly.
Because it was so frustrating. And it really happened before the Rantanen trade. And I remember listening to interviews with Nathan MacKinnon before the season even started. And he was saying, like, yeah, this is kind of a wind down year for me. Like, we're not, me and my trainer, like, we're not taking it as hard. We're not going to be doing it. And I was thinking, like, oh, so we're not going to get the 140 point version of Nathan MacKinnon. And we didn't. I also think, like, when you look at, like, players' career, Nathan MacKinnon had a 40-goal season and then a 50-goal season, and it's extremely rare to have another 40-plus goal season after that. So I think that there's also some decline that was inevitable there, just in terms of, like, you get tired. Like, players just can't do it year after year like that. It's one of the main reasons I think that the Florida Panthers just won't be able to repeat. It's just because, like, this is going to be, like, their fourth year in the finals.
If he's like the sleeper cell.
I know. It's just, like, it takes their toll to, like, try and do in the playoffs like that. And also, prophecy, the Avalanche will prevent any Florida team from three-peating. It's just written in blood on the wall.
It is.
So, like, I'm sorry. It's just not going to happen.
Is this you calling an Avalanche Stanley Cup final?
It is.
This year?
It's a lot.
Someone
you heard it here. But yeah, no. I think that, unfortunately, Avs fans, we're going to get another 40-goal season from Nathan MacKinnon. We're not going to get a 50-goal season. I think we're just going to get a decent season from Nathan MacKinnon. Exactly 123 points. You heard it here.
Wow. You heard it there.
All right.
Did someone say Florida?
Oh, we're not talking about Barkov today. It's not happening. Moving on, if everybody's good to keep going, I know we're kind of hitting the hour mark.
Can I say something, a philosophical point when it comes to sports?
Oh, God, Jesus.
No, I just want to say this because I'm sitting here, like I said, got my handy dandy notebook here, and I just look at that 116 points. And you have to remember
only 116 points. Remember.
If you're saying only, you know, the bar is so high, mm-hmm. and appreciate it. I mean, that's really freaking good. I can't see anybody else on this handy dandy notebook anywhere really near that.
What is this, Blue's Clues?
Actually, you know, I got this from the office today.
You know who should be on that list? Martin Natchez, if he wants over 10 million.
I totally agree. That's why I led this show with saying that this is the Marty year. Because we have to figure out, like, what is he going to be? But I'm just saying there's a lot of athletes who have had great careers and everybody's like, they had like great start, you know, and you're like, oh, in golf, they're going to win all these majors. They're going to do great. And then win as many as you expect. Like, he had a good season. What are you saying? Only 116 points.
But because because you know him as the second best, you know him as the second best player in the NHL. And with that, we are not,
Barkov today.
Shut up. It's McDavid, then MacKinnon, then Draisaitl. Shut up. But with that prestige of being, you know, the second best in the NHL, you got to perform like it. McDavid's number one, MacKinnon's number two.
Before we get back into this, speaking of Marty Natchez, let's go ahead and get into his stats for the season.
Terrible. Trade him.
I'm going to focus on the Colorado stats before I kind of get into his stats with Carolina, because obviously, you know, when you play more teams or play more games with one team, stats, you know, just based on, you know, logic are going to be higher. So looking at 79 games played total from Marty Natchez, 30 with Colorado. In that 30-game span, he's got 11 goals, 17 assists for a total of 28 points, a plus one in those 30 games with 20 minutes and 30 seconds of average ice time played per game. As far as power play points, you've got 5 goals and totaling for 15 points on the power play. Nothing shorthanded, not surprised. 3 game winners with a total of 81 shots, which is, you know, adding to his 113 he had with Carolina. Speaking of Carolina, in the 49 games played he had with Carolina, 16 goals, 39 assists for 55 points total, a plus four in that span with 18 minutes and 5 seconds on average per game. of ice time. 7 power play goals for a total of 22 total points and 5 game winners. One thing I kind of want to point out here first before I throw it to the collective, that's a bit of a jump when it comes to average ice time. 2 extra minutes. And the biggest reason for that is he was not getting those first line minutes that he wanted underneath Rod Brindamore's system, and he got them with Jared Bednar.
What do you mean, that bum system that only supports players like Jordan Staal?
Pucks on net?
Yeah. if you're an HS, you should be 100 points. That's that simple. If you're less than 100 points, you can say bye to 10 million. Not worth it. You have no excuse. You don't have the Rod Brindamore excuse. You don't have the system excuse. You don't have anything else left to put out there except your ability as a hockey player. And gonna be honest, 30 games played with the Avalanche, 28 points, especially with McKinnon being your center, you should be over a point per game. There's no debate about that. You shouldn't be underneath a point per game with McKinnon, with also getting first power play minutes too. So, I mean, it's up to you, man. If you want this season, I'm not high on you. I know some people aren't very high on you either. And you're the main guy from the trade. And you want that? You want 10 million? You want 10.5? You gotta earn it. There's no other way around that.
I will echo that in saying, if he's not at least close to 100 points this upcoming season, if not at 100 points, I don't know as though I can make a case for him to stay.
You have to be 100. You have to be at 100 points, though. You said all of this in the media. You said it that you weren't happy in Carolina. You said you're not really happy in Colorado.
Which I don't believe that.
Whatever the case may be, if there's speculation, there has to be some little truth into it. If you're going to say all these things everywhere, and if you're going to be the guy, if you want to be the guy, you got to put up 100 points. Mikko Rantanen did it. You're going to be compared to him, and if people are saying you're as good as you are, you should be putting up 100 points. No problem. You have Makar and Taze on your back end. There's nothing else.
Bailey, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Oh,
how many games? And you may not know this. I don't know it. I didn't look it up. I wish I would have, because it would have been an interesting thought experiment. How many games did Natchez play with the Hurricanes?
441 minus 30.
411.
So 411 games with.
No, I just mean last year.
Oh, just last year, he played 49 games with the Carolina Hurricanes. Okay. Last year. Okay.
I was just looking, like, Grant, you love talking about Mikko Rantanen, and this will always, as long as Natchez is on the Avs, and as long as, you know, the sun will rise and they will play hockey, and we are in Denver, Colorado, we will talk about Natchez and Rantanen. I just looked up Rantanen, 88 points last year, and he played a good chunk of that with McKinnon.
You gotta imagine 16 give or take games of that came in Carolina, where he visibly looked like he did nothing.
But Mikko Rantanen is not going into the media and saying that he does not have a history in the media of saying that he's not getting the treatment that he thinks he's being given.
No, except he's not the kind of person.
He's not. He's already established himself as a 50 goal scorer, as a 100 point getter.
Not
That's
true.
Not Martin Natchez. True. He has not eclipsed 100 points. I don't think he's even eclipsed. Has he eclipsed 90 points in a season?
He's
the closest he's gotten.
We're talking about
the most recent season.
We're talking about a guy who's 26 years old, who has a track record in the media of saying that he thinks he's capable of these things. There's no reason you should not be 100 points. If you think that if you're gonna stand on your own words, you better be able to back it up with how you play. Mikko Rantanen this past season was not achieving 12 million. He knew he was getting 12 million. It was coming from somewhere. Nate just doesn't have 10 million that people can look to him and prove that he's a $10 million player. That's not the same thing. Sorry, Gavin, you.
No. I think so too. I mean, it's a guy that, like you said, wants $10 million, but hasn't justified it. Now, if the Avs come out tomorrow and say, like, Martin Neches signed for $9.5 million, I'm celebrating in ways that children should not know about.
Oh, it's quite literally like, we're trying to get off explicit, Gavin.
I didn't say anything. So no, it's a massive level of hype. But like you said, we talked about on an earlier season, like an earlier episode, we talked about like all of the players that make $10 million. We went through all of them. I would take any one of those dudes over Martin Neches, except Jonathan Huberdeau. Don't do that to me, please.
The Huber dude.
He was erected into the Florida Panthers Mount Rushmore. Did you see that shit?
Yeah. It's just a situation where, like, for me, I'm not expecting Martin Neches to get 100 points. I would love him to, but I'm looking at him and I'm saying, like, you want $10 million? There better be 90 points this season.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Is like,
how come you agree with him when he says it? No, but
actually,
like,
you know what? No, I don't agree. Yes.
Thank you.
I don't agree.
Thank you.
One, it has to be triple. Really? It has to be triple digits.
First of all, it's because I'm a man. And hearing it from a woman is a different type of situation.
There is no unearthly reason if you are a first round draft pick and you are playing with Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, Devon Toews, you have Arturi Lehkonen, the guy literally just put on your line just to put the puck in the net. There's no unearthly reason. You have power play 1 minute. You're playing 20 minutes a night. There's no earthly explanation that you should not be triple digits.
You know,
that's
Graham,
like, that's like looking at Draisaitl and saying, you know what? I would really be happy if he put up 110.
Grant, I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I mean, you're looking at a guy who 83 points. That's the most, Gavin. Yeah, you said 83 is the most he's had
this
in
most
the season. Yeah. And it looks like it. I'm just kind of flipping through. Yeah, I mean, he just came off of a career year. Mm-hmm. And you're putting him on a top line with Nathan MacKinnon, third best player in hockey.
Oh my and, God.
But no, okay. All jokes aside, you are putting him on a line where he should produce a lot. And you're acting like, oh, he sucks. Oh, he's terrible. But you'll be willing to admit that Carolina is a place where offensive players go to die. I mean, Rantanen turned into a nobody offensively there.
I will give this guy a chance.
Reaction if I had to play in Carolina under Rod Moore. I would also become depressed.
I just pulled up a 30-game sample where he's not even a point per game. There's no
Grant,
reason.
Grant, go. Last year, he had 83 points. Over half of that was in a system that you rant about all the time, how they're boring to watch. They don't score goals. They're not an offensively minded team. He comes over to the Avs, and you want him to be ranting in. And honestly, during the regular season, and I'm going to whisper and get really close, he kind of was. He kind of was ranting in during the regular season. So give this guy a chance. That's why I opened the show by saying this is his year. If he does well, and I think he will do pretty well if he just stays on his feet, I think it's fine. But you got to give him a chance. I mean, you're already like, oh, he's terrible. Oh, I'm down on him. Like, he just came off a career year. You can't be down on a guy who came off a career year.
This is a guy who has a repeated history in the media of backing himself and saying that he is a capable.
What's
he is wrong a player
with that?
Of, he is a player of this standard. He's not a player. He has never proven he is a player of $10 million
standard. You haven't given him an entire year in a system that is offensively minded. And you're like, oh, no, this guy, he's not the guy. Oh, he's not the guy. He could be the guy.
I haven't said that he is the guy. I have said that he needs to prove he's the guy. You can't just say that you're the guy.
Yeah, but give the guy some hope. I mean, have some hope, Grant. He could have a good season. I'm off on him.
I think the expectation for me here, as much as I would love to see, as Gavin said, as much as I would love to see an 100-point season from him, I don't think it happens. I think if he gets to 90, I'm sitting there calling that a win.
That's huge. If he gets to 90, I'm like, mission accomplished. That's good. That's good. 10 points, that's
whatever. You know, that's a pass through a guy with an empty net goal at the end of the game.
How can you not expect someone coming off a career year in a terrible system designed for offense, the 12th pick in 2017, not to score 100 points with the second best player in hockey, the fourth/fifth best player in hockey in Cale Makar, and that you have Devontae's and you have a guy literally just designed there just to put the puck in the net from 10 feet like Zach Hyman.
Because hockey is hard sometimes, Grant. It's hard to score. You act like every game is, you know, 10-9. I mean, you're going to have games where you're off. You're going to have games where things don't go together. You get 90 points in a season, and I keep going back to my handy-dandy notebook, and I really don't see – I mean, the only person on the Avs roster right now who's close to 90 points is
– it's Cale Makar.
Oh, I'm only looking at forwards here. But Natchez, you know, you've got MacKinnon, your top dog, and you got Natchez, who put up a pretty similar regular season to Rantanen.
I'm going to go ahead and move this conversation along. I think a Martin Natchez episode is inevitable at this point.
Next week. Tune in.
Might be next week, to be completely honest. Want to move on to the second line and looking at stats from our tried and true captain, Gabriel Landeskog. Now, before getting into his stats from a couple years ago, I want to talk about his playoff stats. 5 games played, 1 goal, 3 assists, 4 points for a +4 on the season. Now, I want to pull up some of the other situations. That +4 came from 17 minutes and 13 seconds on average of ice time per game. You're not getting any special team stats out of him, nor are you getting any game winners, overtime winners, things of that sort. You're getting 10 shots out of him, though. I think, and before we get into chatting about him as a player, and if anybody needs to get out of here, I know we're getting into a longer episode. Please tell me to shut up and let me know. You need to head out of here. But looking at the 2021-2022 Stanley Cup winning season, 51 games played, 30 goals, 29 assists for 59 total points. You're a +27 with about 20 minutes of average ice time per game. 7 goals for 15 total points on the power play. 5 game winners with 1 overtime goal. I think it's... Now, I said this on a podcast earlier this week that if you are getting prime Gabriel Landeskog back, I think recreating a season like that is going to be difficult, but not impossible. Now, looking at it from a logical standpoint, I think there is something to be said about, yes, you have not played a full 82-game season since 2014. The last bigger number than 50 that he played came from the 2018-19 season with 73 games played. I think if he there's maybe some expectation here that he may be subject to some load management just because of the gravity of the rehabilitation period he's just gone through and the 3-year injury that he is coming off of. What is the expectation here for Gabriel Landeskog? Are you expecting him to find that ceiling again, or is this really a, I need to find my groove and we can worry about hitting that ceiling next season if I'm able to get there?
Yeah, I think when I look at Landeskog, I'm going to take the – probably – I'm going to try and take, like, the realistic approach. I think at maximum he plays 70 games. I think he gets 22 goals and 56 points. I think that that's what he does in a whole season. I think definitely some load management there, but also just some general wear and tear of not playing for 3 whole seasons. I'm going to be honest. I never thought Landeskog would play ever again.
This is exactly what Reed said earlier.
I really did not think that he would ever touch the ice ever again as a player. I think that it's an incredible, unprecedented recovery. And I'm so glad he's back and not like a 30-point bum playing in the league, making $7 million against the cap. I love to have the captain back, and I think his leadership will more than make up with the lack of games played and points.
I'm going to be a little realistic here. I think the only thing I expect out of Gabe Landeskog this season, at least, is 25 goals minimum. I think assists. I don't
minimum?
Think
assists.
Yeah, I don't. I think 25 plus goals. I think that he can do it with being on Brock. With Brock Nelson, I think he's capable of it. Even on a probably like Gavin said, 62 games, 60 games. I'd be surprised if they put him up to 70. If I'm being honest, but yeah, I expect 25 goals. I don't really care about assists. I think he's just going to be a guy. I think he's just going to get most of his goals on the power play and then, you know, get even strength goals here and there. But other than that, I don't really have any expectations for him. He's not supposed to be a playmaker. He's supposed to be a guy that you park in front of the net, you have Cale Makar shoot, and he tips. That's pretty much it.
Reed, anything to add?
Other than I think the expectation from the Avalanche is that he puts up a season like you guys are talking about. He plays a fair amount of games. Like I said earlier, 17 minutes a game after not playing for 3 years. You know, we're not talking about easing him in. And the Avs' philosophy this season is, you know, win or die. So they're going to need him to put up, like, this is not a farewell tour. They're going to need him to be a contributor. And if we're looking at projections of he's going to be on the second line, he could potentially be on the top power play unit, like, he's got to perform, and that's what they're expecting him to do, right? So now me, I hope he can do that. I was with Gavin. I was like, I don't know if this dude's ever going to skate again. I don't know if he's ever going to play again. So there's always the injury question. But, I mean, yeah, if he can get 60, 70 games, 20 goals, that's awesome. But I think that's what they're expecting out of him.
Moving on to the guy centering on that same line, Brock Nelson. It should be, if all goes well, getting his first full season with the Colorado Avalanche after many, many years on the East Coast with the New York Islanders. Last season, I'm in a similar situation with Netjes. I'm going to touch on his points with the Avalanche before getting into his points with the Islanders. 19 games after acquiring him, pretty close, if not right, on the trade deadline day.
It was day before.
It was deadline. Day before. That's right. 19 games with the Avalanche. In that span, he's got 6 goals, 7 assists for 13 points, a +6 with 17 minutes and 30 seconds of average ice time per game. On the power play, you've got 2 goals totaling for 3 total points and 1 game winner. Now, I will say, while I maybe expected more from him toward the end of the season, I think I am also being realistic in saying the systems are not the same. And it obviously took him a little bit to kind of adjust and kind of sit in the role that the Avalanche put him in, being that 2C in a system that moves a lot more quickly than the Islanders system does. Speaking of the Islanders, want to touch on his points over there really quickly. 61 games played, 20 goals, 23 assists for 43 total points, +2 with 19 minutes and 21 seconds of average ice time per game, 1 goal for 4 total points on the power play. He did get some shorthanded time with the Islanders, 3 shorthanded goals for 3 total shorthanded points, 6 game winners with 1 overtime goal. I think that's what you almost expect him to do with the Avalanche next season. You expect him to be a prominent presence, and you know, it's not going to be a similar situation that the Islanders had him in, where you're maybe expecting him to get as many game winners as an Arturi Lehkonen or as a Martin Necas type situation. But I do think you're expecting him to show up. Obviously, if he's going to be contributing second unit power play time, you're expecting him to pony up for it. Grant?
He's a tough one. I think 60 points minimum for him, especially with the surrounding cast that he'll have in Nichushkin and Landeskog, or if you put Lehkonen on the second line, you put Nichushkin on the top line. I think he's got a good supporting cast, maybe better than everything he had with the Islanders, except for that one year where they made a really deep playoff run in the Eastern Conference Finals. I do think, though, especially at least for me, I think the 60 points has to be a minimum, considering that what we've given up for him and the contract that we've given him to at 7.5, and the fact that we gave up our number one prospect in Callum Ritchie for him, just like Martin Necas, the price to get you, or the price, your price was high when we acquired you. And I think if he has a slow start, this looks even worse for a management group who's been has gotten worse over the last few years. I don't see how you could get less than 60 points on this team since they are so offensively focused. The other thing I would like to see him do as well is he's had a career faceoff percentage of 48%. He had a 52% with the Islanders through 61 games. I would like that to be over 50%, but that might be asking a lot, especially considering like McKinnon's not great on the draw and neither is Parker Kelly really. So you're kind of looking at him to be the defensive zone guy to take the faceoff if Jack Drury's in the box, or if maybe the third line was just out there for a while. So I guess that's what I would expect out of Brock Nelson.
Reed?
Yeah, I would agree with Grant. I mean, he needs to
shock.
I know. Well, yeah. And honestly, with Grant and my voice sounding so similar, it just sounds like Grant is agreeing with Grant right now. But yeah, I'd say 60 points. You know what I found kind of interesting? His ice time dropped off a cliff in the postseason. And I mean, maybe dropped off a cliff. That might be a bit extreme. It's not like he went down to like 5 minutes, but it's a whole 2 minutes less. And he was playing less with the Avs than he was playing with the Islanders on average.
He was top line on the Islanders. Yeah, he was top line on the Islanders. But additionally, he also had Landeskog coming back, so they had to limit ice time there.
Yeah.
And they were getting shut down by the Dallas second line of Johnston. It wasn't Ben on that second line, but they were getting shut down by the Johnston line. Of Dallas, and they were very, except for Landeskog's goal, that second line was very ineffective.
I do remember that. But
sorry, but Gavin, go ahead.
Go ahead. That's totally fine. 60 points, and if it's less than that, or if he's starting slow, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to move him.
Yeah, and for those of you watching, there actually is no Reed Foster. It's just Grant talking to a wall.
We say that knowing no one is watching this.
He's in a bathroom.
It's hard, and it's just hour and 30 minutes. It's actually been really creepy to watch. But yeah, no, it's just a tough part with Brock Nelson, because like that second line was actually so good, they just couldn't finish. They were dominating in every other metric. It's just they could not put the puck in the net outside of that one highlight reel goal with Gabe Landeskog. So hopefully, like, obviously with more time to gel as a unit across the full season, you'll see them be a very effective second line. But for Brock Nelson's projections, I got to agree. I think 60 points has to be the minimum. I'm putting him at least 25 goals. I don't think he'll hit 30. Like, he doesn't have power play time unless the Avs try and put him at bumper. I think he's an excellent bumper player, but I don't think they'll put him there. I think they'll put Nichushkin there, or Landeskog before they put him there. And at the end of the day, I think with Brock Nelson, you're just asking him to not be the guy, which is something I brought up a little bit earlier. Like, he doesn't have to be the veteran guy in the locker room that has mm-hmm. to do everything. He's just there. Mm-hmm. He gets to hang out, not in a horrible system designed by Lou Lamoriello. He gets to basically chill out, kind of like kind of the same learning process as Devontaeves had, which him and Devontaeves are also friends, where they kind of break out of one of the harshest systems in the NHL and then kind of take off. So Brock Nelson, extremely reliable, plays a 200-foot game, does all the little things right, good defensively, also good offensively, is great forechecking along the wall, really is just the peace of mind you get as a second-line center. And hopefully, fingers crossed, the Avs don't have to look for a second-line center anymore. Should have signed Nazem Kadri. Should have traded Girard. But
we don't need to bring that up, Gavin. We don't need to bring that up.
Before I
Grant was kind of low on Nazem Kadri.
We're doing a five-hour show, baby.
That is so not true. Oh my god, that is so not true.
I will point out too, in saying it, like kind of not piggybacking off of something Reed was saying, I would find it very, very shocking if they get halfway through this season and decide to move move Nelson after just signing him to a deal this big.
Well, it's a terrible deal. No one else is going to take that in the NHL.
So, but that's what I'm saying is I would be shocked if they try to move him after signing him to something like that, just because it, like, if you're talking about self-belief, this guy's got a lot of belief in what, or this team has a lot of belief in what Nelson can provide. Moving on to our last guy in Valeri Nichushkin, and that's where we'll end today's podcast. I think Grant's going to bounce out of here. So,
see everyone, don't look at my socials, please.
Really quickly, and that's where we'll cap off on today's podcast. Valeri Nichushkin, after a non-existent start to the season, just with coming back from suspension, 43 games played, 21 goals, 13 assists for 34 total points, a plus 11 on the season in 19 minutes and 44 seconds of average ice time. Surprisingly, only 8 penalty minutes. He's the only guy I'll point that out for. With 5 power play goals, 8 power play points total. Nichushkin, you're just hoping he can play a full season, I think, at that point. Like, that is the goal after his kind of off-ice history, I think, in my opinion, is get this man to a full season.
Agreed.
And, yeah, just kind of see what he can provide from there.
Yeah, totally agree with that. I mean, Nichushkin is a guy where he is a key component to this Avs team anymore. I mean, he mm-hmm. feels like he is a core member. And when he's out, it definitely, you feel it. And you just know, oh, we're missing a big part of the team. And he always seems to perform pretty well for somebody who has so many issues. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, if we're talking expectations next year, like if he continues a similar pace as what he had last year with his 43 games, that's what you want. That's what you need out of him. I think he's a solid performer, and I'm expecting that same kind of stuff out of him.
Gavin?
I agree. I think that I'm looking at least a guy who's fully healthy, has been on pace for it a bunch of times, should hit a 30-goal season in his career, at least a 70 to 75-point season. Like, obviously, the defensive, like, shutdown player that he was is kind of declined, but really, I don't care. Like, as long as he's responsible defensively and he plays, like with the offensive production he does, him clocking in it, like what is it, 6.125 or is it 6.2? I can't remember what his contract is. That's pretty good value for a contract for a guy like that. I know everyone talks about it as like, oh my God, I can't believe it's this much on our books when he's like having a little bit of trouble. But after it, but when he's actually in the lineup, it's a good contract. And there's a reason why Joe Sakic / Chris McFarland decided to sign him over giving all that money to Nazem Kadri, really. It's because he was the younger player with a lot more promise. And I think he still has a lot more to give. And I really, really hope he has a stress-free season.
I want to point out that this is a guy who has never played a full 82-game season in his career. Even looking back,
he gotten?
79. Really? Which means I'm anticipating some of those games. And this is only with Dallas, too. Both 79-game seasons that he had were when he played for the Dallas Stars from 2013 to 2019. In his time with the Avalanche, the most he's eclipsed, or the most he's gotten to, 65. So this is a guy you're looking at this season. Like, there is no reason outside of a shorter term injury that you shouldn't be playing less than 50 games. And in that situation, you're looking at 21 goals through 43. There's no reason he can't get to 30 if he can stay healthy, stay, you know, clean off the ice. I don't see any situation barring injury that he can't achieve that.
When he's there, the Avs become a team lethal. In the NHL that's top. You know, it's hard to beat the roster that the Avs put together when he's there. When he's not, it's a huge hole, and that's why it sometimes feels like the Avs are underdogs against some of the cream of the crop, because they're missing a huge player like that.
Yep. And with that, if you guys have nothing else to add on our top six analysis, any final comments, concerns?
We only went 40 minutes over.
Only 40 minutes. It's fine. Reed, thank you so much for hopping on. I know the brotherly duo was kind of interrupted here the last couple minutes. Any social situations or anything you would like to plug before we send you off?
No.
Well, thank you so much for adding your expertise. Gavin, where can the people find you?
You can find me over at Avalanche Digest. I'm not as unhinged over there. I'm very professional. I'm a good boy. Go ahead and check out the channel. We post a lot of cool stuff. We got one about Victor Olofsson up right now. You can go watch.
Fair. Before I get into plugging my stuff, be sure to follow us over on the podcast on Twitter at AvsPodWarning. Wouldn't be able to do this without the help of the Hockey Podcast Network. Be sure to go give them over a follow on X at HockeyPodNet. They've got something for everybody and every single team. If you're looking for just regular hockey content too, whether that's fantasy content or just kind of, you know, shooting around and roundtable type stuff, be sure to check out all of the awesome podcasts that they have over there. As far as I go, you can find me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that is Bailey with two Y's. Find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. As I've mentioned a few different times, I am the credentialed beat writer and reporter for the Colorado Avalanche for the Hockey News. So be sure to go find all of my articles over on the Hockey News' website with the Colorado Avalanche channel. That's going to do it for today's episode. Again, thank you guys so much for tuning in and joining us. Be sure to join us next week, where we'll kind of get into a deep dive of the bottom six and covering any other news that is dropped between now and then. But for now, thank you for joining. And this has been the Avalanche Warning. See you guys.